Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Join us as we journey into the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin and how did they end? Let's find out on The Fan of History, episode 15. Last time on The Fan of History, from 911 BC onwards, the Assyrians fight to reclaim the Middle Assyrian Empire that was lost. Last time, they invented the cavalry. All right. So, Dan, what is happening next?
Well, we have come to the death of Tukulti-Ninurta in 883 BC. But as I said before, Tukulti-Ninurta II, the king of Assyria, the chosen lord of Ashur, he was old when he became king.
Right.
So he has his grown-up son, and this son, Ashur-nasir-pal II, becomes the king of Assyria. Many consider this guy the true founder of the empire, and I can't tell you how excited I am to be talking about him, because he is so fantastic. There is a mold that all Assyrian kings try to fit. They sort of try to look the same and behave the same. And this guy very much sets the mold. He is by many considered to be the true founder of the empire.
Mm-hmm.
And the three kings before him had prepared the way. But this is where it really gets going. And just to give you an idea about who he is, I will give you his full title.
What is it?
He is the supreme, the merciless, the destroyer of opposition, the exalted king, the shepherd, the protector of the quarters of the world, the king, the word of whose mouth destroys mountain and seas, who by his lordly attack has forced mighty and merciless kings from the rising of the sun to the setting of the same to acknowledge one supremacy. And this title goes on all his documents.
That letterhead must be enormous.
Yes. You can sort of zoom out when he starts talking. He will go on about how great he is. He is an ambitious and able monarch. He is a fighter, a hunter, a builder, and a boaster. But most of all, he is the number one cruel Assyrian king. So when faced with opposition, Ashur-nasir-pal II will become very angry and do horrible things. And we have many atrocities in war today, but few and he come to the level of Ashur-nasir-pal II.
Wow.
We'll talk more about that in two episodes.
Okay.
When he really gets going. But I think the thing with his early years, the 4 years we'll talk about now, is that they are not as well documented. So we just probably don't know the details of his atrocities. But the thing he does when he becomes the king is to immediately attack someone, anyone. And he decides to go up the greater Sab River to the east, up to the Zagros Mountain, to a place called the Kabku. He crushes all opposition. He loots and ravages. And that's all the details we get this far. He puts a victory stele on Mount Equi. He builds a city named Al-Ashur Nasirpal. And this first campaign has a second part, because he turns to the northeast and receives the tribute of the land Kadmuku. He will campaign 14 times in his full reign, and that's quite a lot. But when he's doing the second campaign of 883 BC, he gets word that the Aramean kings by the Khabur River, who is blocking his goal to control the upper Euphrates, because the Assyrians really want to control the land between the upper Euphrates and the upper Tigris River. That's their heartland of the Middle Assyrian Empire, and they still don't have control of all of this. And now these Arameans are making incursions into Assyria, the area that the Assyrians actually control. And Ashurnasirpal becomes really angry. But we also have to talk about China, because in the same year, 883 BC, there is some sort of trouble in China. It seems that the Duke Ai of Qi has disputed the king. So there is maybe a civil war, but at least there is a fight between the king who has to side and the Duke Ai of Qi. And the king has to side with the Marquis of Ji, who is a very powerful noble, and together they take down Duke Ai of Qi. And Duke Ai is being boiled to death in a large cauldron for this dispute, and Ashurnasirpal would approve. And King Yi installs Duke Ai's younger half-brother Jing on the throne of Qi, and he will be known as the Duke Hu of Qi. So the noble lords are very powerful in Yu China, but for now the king is in control of the lords.
That's a lot of violence that happens. I don't know if we've seen so much.
But Ashurnasirpal II is just getting started, like the whole Neo-Assyrian Empire. Still very early. Next year, in 882 BC, Ashurnasirpal is ready to go to war, and now he has his army fully mustered. He has probably 50,000 guys. As I have mentioned before, the process is that in the spring, everybody who is anything in Assyria shows up for the muster and wants to go to war with the king. But not everyone is chosen, so it's a great honor to go on this campaign. 50,000 guys, superior equipment to anybody else nearby. And this year, Ashurnasirpal II goes north along the Tigris into the Nairi lands, like his father. And he actually comes up on a statue that his father put there during his campaigns, just a couple of years earlier, next to a statue of Tiglath-Pileser I, who was the king of the Middle Assyrian Empire. But Ashurnasirpal gets irritated by these statues, and he thinks that I am much better than these guys. So he puts a slightly bigger statue of himself. But the people of the Nairi lands, they are like, this guy doesn't seem to be like the other guys. So they decide to yield and pay tribute. So Ashurnasirpal doesn't find anybody to fight. But then there is one guy, Kulaya, who decides not to pay his tribute. And that's a pretty huge mistake then, because then Ashurnasirpal II has a target. He attacks the city of Kulaya, plunders it, and destroys it, and claims another city, Tushka, as an Assyrian colony. So he builds a depot of weapons and stuff there and sets it up as a local headquarters in the north. under Assyrian control. And his father also went to the Bitsadini tribe and conquered them and made them swear an oath to him. And their leader was Amebal A. And he's still around. He's still the leader of the Bitsadini. And when Ashurnasirpal II shows up, he remembers what happened last time. So he renews his oath and pays tribute to Ashurnasirpal. We have to remember Amebal. We will show up later again in the story. There are like these mini kingdoms in the Nairi lands, so they have these random names, and sometimes the names never come back, so it's very hard to know where these kingdoms were. But there is a small kingdom called Nairia, and another small kingdom called Isala. They both swear tribute to, or pays tribute and swears fealty to Ashurnasirpal II. So, very early in this campaign season, he has won everything in the north that he planned. But remember that those the Aramean kings by the Khabur River were giving him problems. They are in North Syria, and it's just south of the mountains. So he takes a path through the mountains that makes him arrive north of these Aramean kings.
And okay.
They expected him from the east.
Right.
But he now comes down from the mountains about, surprise, here I am. Let's do this.
Wow.
And they are surprised by his appearance and this great army. So they immediately decide to give him a lot of gifts and swear loyalty oaths to him. So it's the Arameans, the Neo-Hittite states nearby, they do the same. And the kings of the Kanil Gabat, this is also an area where the Assyrians have huge interests, that they also submit and pay tribute. And everybody says that Ashur is the best god, and Ashurnasirpal is our great overlord, and we really like you Assyrians. Thanks that you came this year. And Ashurnasirpal makes them swear this really strong oaths, and he's like, if you ever break these oaths, I will be back, and I will be really mad. They are, okay, I believe you.
Yeah, right. It's like, hey, if you promise not to murder us, hey, we'll give you all these things. Just please don't murder us.
But for some reason, they will forget how frightful he and his army was, and some of them will break these oaths, and we'll see what happens then. The Neo-Hittites, being the most civilized people nearby, and arguably even more civilized than the Assyrians, they carry the heritage of the great Hittite Empire, they realize that they have something that the other ones don't have, so they decide to get some extra points with Ashurnasirpal. So they give him a tour of the Hittite palaces, the old palaces of the ancient empire, and it shows him a lot of art, and Ashurnasirpal is really impressed with the Hittite art. So we'll find that in all Assyrian works, after this point, there is a strong Hittite influence. Particularly the Lamassu, these huge man-beasts things.
Right.
They come from the Hittite culture, but they are very much adopted by Ashurnasirpal II. So he's like, this is great art. I want art like this. Build me art like this. And he puts up people in Assyria into looking into building this art. He probably hires a couple of Hittites as well, or gets them as tribute.
Right.
to create some great art. But he needs to find another target, and now he wants a target that will fight back. And he's still allied. We don't have details about this, but it seems that Ashurnasirpal II has renewed the oaths of his father with Babylon. So he never ever considers Babylon a target. And he will never go to war with Babylon. And neither will Babylon. So this is, I'll get back to this in a later episode, but it's really, really good for Babylon. Because they don't have anything to put up against this.
I was about to say, I don't know. If he's looking for a fight, I don't know if Babylon would be much of a
Very true. And probably he could get some internal resistance if he went against Babylon. First, he would be an Oathbreaker, and second, wreck a great culture. And the Assyrians are sensitive about beating up Babylonians and plundering Babylonian cities as well. They think that's sacrilegious.
Mm. Well, that makes sense.
But there are a lot of people that Assyrians don't have any second thoughts about beating up. Some of them are to the east, and it appears that there's an ancient kingdom called Samua in the Zagros Mountains, in like the foothills of the Zagros Mountains, exposed to the wrath of the Assyrians, near the headwaters of the Diyala River. And there's a city, there is an Assyrian city called Khaleesi. It has nothing to do with Game of Thrones.
I was about to say, that also sounds very familiar.
And please note that Ashurnasirpal II has a longer title than Daenerys Targaryen. The city Khaleesi is 60 kilometers southeast of Nineveh, and Ashurnasirpal II will use this as the base for the campaign. Like his father, he doesn't use the old capital Ashur as the base for his campaign, but now he moves to a new city. So he makes all the soldiers gather in Khaleesi, and this is very close to the Zagros Mountains. There is a sheikh of the land Dagara, close to Samua, also a mini-kingdom in the Zagros foothills, called Nur Adad. Very confusing, because we had a guy called Nur Adad being beat up by Assyrians just a couple of episodes ago. But there is an inscription saying that Nur Adad had rebelled. I don't know why he had rebelled. I don't know if he had any agreement with the Assyrians. But he knew that this rebellion of his would probably incur the wrath of Ashurnasirpal II. So he has built a great wall in the one pass leading to Samua and Dagara. It's called the Pass of Babitu. And Ashurnasirpal has to besiege this wall to get into the mountains to find his victims. And this is his first big challenge. And we don't have the details, but the wall is broken through. And Ashurnasirpal enters the lands of Samua and Dagara. We only get details like slaughtering and plundering, but it is a total Assyrian victory. And Ashurnasirpal has the idea of finding laborers. He's very interested in finding slave laborers, and particularly skilled ones. So he spares all the skilled workers he finds, but he totally wrecks these kingdoms.
So he basically takes all their, what you want to call it, intellectual IP.
Yes, and he also sort of destroys their cities and take their non-intellectual IP as slaves.
Right.
He actually goes even further to a place called Mount Nisir. This is one of the mountains where Noah's Ark is supposed to have ended up. It's mentioned in the Epic of Gilgamesh. It's probably a mountain that is today called Pir Umar Gudrun. It's about 9,000 feet high. And on this mountain, he erects a stele. And this marks the total destruction of the kingdom of Samua. So he builds a new city, or a town rather, called Dur Ashur. And he makes this a local headquarters. Well, he puts in weapon depots and an Assyrian governor. The city of Dur Ashur will return as an Assyrian sort of front base when they do further expeditions into the Zagros Mountains against the mountain tribes.
Is this you said he established a governor. Was this a common practice at the time?
There is, it is possible that Ashurnasirpal starts this by installing governors and sort of creating new provinces.
Hmm.
And he also will maybe at this point, maybe later, make sure that these governors are, his idea is that the governors should be eunuchs so that they don't establish dynasties. So that when the governor dies, he has to appoint another eunuch.
I gotcha.
So he doesn't, this practice will eventually be abandoned and it will lead to great problems for Syria. So Ashurnasirpal II had a good idea there to put eunuchs as governors.
Right, because then like you said, you couldn't have a hereditary title at that point.
Yes, and this is exactly the problem that the Zhou royal dynasty of China will run into. Because they will not put eunuchs as governors. So they have hereditary dynasties all around them.
Right.
In 881 BC, King Ji can't catch a break, so there are wars in the south. And the Shu, who are not, they are sometimes in sort of the Zhou sphere of control and sometimes not, but they ally with the barbarian tribe called the Dongji. And there is a historical note from this time saying that during the reign of King Ji, royal power was not strong and the regional rulers failed to obey the court. And this is exactly the problem that Ashurnasirpal II tries to prevent.
Right.
Of course, he doesn't know anything about China. In 880 BC, then, Ashurnasirpal II does the unthinkable. He breaks with 1,000 years of tradition, and this does not happen very often. But he decides to go with his father's idea and to its natural conclusion, that move the capital. Because Ashur is located in totally wrong place. It takes ages to go from Ashur to the war.
All right.
All the wars that he plans. And he's now very wealthy. And he has all these laborers that he has taken on his campaigns. So he decides to build a new capital. And there is a small village called Kalhu. This has been located. It's in modern Nimrud in Iraq. And you will often hear in sort of modern history that they refer to this place as Nimrud. But that's a very modern name. So the name is Kala or Kalhu. It was a small village established by Shalmaneser I, I think, in the 14th century BC. But the village has fallen on hard times and it's just very small. But it's located at a great site, so it's almost nothing. And he builds a great city, perhaps one of the biggest cities in Mesopotamia. And he wants to make this city spectacular, bigger and better than Ashur.
Well, it's kind of... He wants to make it his. Look at his wonderful thing he created with all of his spoils.
Yeah, and we'll talk a lot more about Ashurnasirpal II in upcoming episode. This was just his early warming up period. I think he's the third greatest of all the Neo-Assyrian kings of the entire empire. And I'm really impressed with what he accomplished. And it often gets overshadowed by his enormous cruelty.
That's going to happen.
But we have he makes 14 campaigns and he doesn't really ever lose a war. So he will, it's unclear exactly when it happens, but he's very close to and probably does realize the goal of restoring the Middle Assyrian Empire. But when they succeed in restoring the Middle Assyrian Empire, they have sort of forgotten that that was their goal and they just keep going.
Hmm. So they overshoot.
Yes, they will overshoot the Middle Assyrian Empire with a great, overshoot it a lot. And, So often when people talk about the Assyrian Empire, they always mean this empire, the third empire, the biggest empire, the Neo-Assyrian Empire.
Gotcha.
But other things are happening in the Middle East as well. We have the king of Israel, Omri.
Mm-hmm.
He attacks Moab. Moab is a small country to the southeast of Israel, to the east of what will become Judah. And this is why we have Omri mention on this Meshech Stele, Moab Stele, a stone erected by a later king of Moab. And this war is successful. Omri forces Moab to become a vassal state of Israel.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And he also realizes that the location of the Israel capital, Tirsa, isn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
So he decides to buy a hill at the perfect location. I don't know who he's buying it from, but the price apparently was 60 kilograms of silver. And on this hill, he builds the Israel capital of Samaria.
Okay.
And Samaria will remain the capital of Israel until the fall of the kingdom. So Jerusalem will turn up as the capital of Judah, but Samaria is the capital of Israel. And there is archaeological evidence that there is a great amount of building at Samaria at this point. And Samaria is not that far from Tyre and the Phoenicians. And it seems that the Phoenicians are involved in this. They are probably helping out. They are selling a lot of stuff to Omri. And he has an alliance going, especially with Tyre, the Phoenician city. So Omri is now a power player in Canaan. And he has this little growing kingdom going. And he's still far enough from Assyria not to notice Shurnassipal II. So things are looking bright for Israel. How long have you been going now?
Let's see. Let me look at the minutes. Looks like about just at 30.
Okay, then I can confuse you with, I can start to mess up Egypt.
Uh-oh.
Because now Egypt will get complicated. Because earlier we have, you know, I mentioned that Choshing started the 22nd dynasty.
Right.
And all the 21st, all the first 21 dynasties have been sequential. There's like dynasty 1, dynasty 2, dynasty 3, very orderly. But now the 23rd dynasty starts, while okay. The 22nd dynasty will still be going on for 150 years.
Wait, that's what? So the 23rd dynasty starts before the 22nd ends?
Yes, and there will even be a 24th dynasty before the 22nd ends.
Wow. Okay.
So I'll try to explain this, but it is very confusing to me. So I expect it to be confusing to you and the listeners as well. There is a guy called Harsiese A, He's the first pharaoh of the 23rd dynasty. His father was a high priest in Thebes, that is in the south of Egypt, what is called Upper Egypt, because the Egyptians count, they don't think in north and south terms, they think in terms of the Nile.
So it's right.
The Upper Nile, because the Nile runs south, runs north to the Mediterranean. And his father was a high priest in Thebes called Shoshenq Si. So Harsiyase A does not only become the high priest, but is a full-fledged pharaoh of the south. So apparently the 22nd dynasty has lost control of the south, because Takelot I is still the king in the north. They are all Libyans, and they are all related to each other. That's why the names are like Shoshenq.
Right.
So it's even disputed which Libyan belongs to which dynasty. And the 24th dynasty will also be Libyans. It will be messy, and it will be messy for a long time in many episodes. I might skip Egypt earlier than I did in the YouTube show, because it's just so confusing. The 25th dynasty will sort this out and create one Egypt again. But in a sense, it's still one Egypt. It just has several pharaohs at the same time. But there will be a guy called Pi, and he will sort this out for us, hopefully. But that's much later than this.
Okay. Wow. That is really confusing.
It is. And it will become much worse.
Is this? I'm guessing this goes back to the whole issue of the pharaoh ruling in one area, but then the priests or the religious having more power in a different area.
It is similar to what happened in the 21st dynasty when the priests were ruling the south. But this is different in that Harsiyase A actually calls himself pharaoh, and it doesn't count the years in the years of Takelot I, but it counts in his own years.
Okay.
So this is more serious a division than the 21st dynasty. And it's just two generations after Shoshenq, and his great goal was to stop this. So you could say that Shoshenq failed.
Right. Okay.
And that is finally it for the 880s BCE. And we'll soon get to decades that are much more interesting, or much more, have much more content than this one.
That's a lot of stuff to happen just in the 880s.
Yes, it's amazing that we know this much for something that happened 2,900 years ago.
Well, it is pretty crazy. Well, folks, if you liked this, please consider the Patreon, patreon.com/fanofhistory. Also, you can watch episodes on YouTube. There are some, it's a nice visual representation of similar content. Go ahead and like and subscribe there. Also, give us a review on iTunes. This is on iTunes. We're also on Facebook /fanofhistory, on Twitter @thefanofhistory. And if you want to visit the website, it's thefanofhistory.wordpress.com. And
I'm having, I'm thinking a lot about YouTube and this podcast. And I
sure.
think this podcast is perhaps a better way to convey this information. YouTube is, you don't really need to be visual. I think people have an easier time listening to this than to sort of follow 100% attention a YouTube show. But I will be hopefully experimenting a bit on YouTube, and this might sort of decide the direction we're taking this podcast in next year.
Mm-hmm.
So please check out the YouTube and tell me what you like and don't like there. We are right now. I'm looking into. We are recording this in early May 2015, and right now I'm looking into having another person create another show on YouTube and having me just as a narrator and not doing the research and stuff, because that's what takes a lot of time. So we may be starting another series on the YouTube channel starting in 200,000 BC. So
200,000?
Yeah, we thought that 880 BC, that's sort of like yesterday. It's a very modern history, so we decided to go even further back.
Wow. Yeah, that's a real long time.
Yeah. So hopefully there is something on YouTube about that when you listen to this.
Excellent.
We have one more thing before we go.
Nope, that's it, folks. Thanks for listening.
No, we have one more thing. We have to play Assyrian or Babylonian.
Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah, I get to prove what I don't know to all the nice folks listening.
Well, you haven't done very well at this.
I have done terribly.
My favorite subject.
Oh, yeah?
Women.
Well, I do have a lot of sisters, so maybe that has prepared me for this episode.
Kind of Egyptian. But we are talking Assyrian or Babylonian, so I will give you five names. Famous women.
Okay.
You will have to tell me if they are Assyrian or Babylonian.
Okay. I will do my best.
Okay, here's the first one. Semiramis.
Semiramis. Semiramis. I'm going to go Semiramis. That sounds familiar, but I don't know why it would be familiar. Queen, I'm guessing?
That's very likely, yes. Yes, she's queen. Mentioned by none other than Julius Caesar in his writing.
Huh. Well,
Caesar did not know, wasn't very good at Mesopotamian history.
All right. I'm going to say Assyrian.
You are correct.
Yes.
We'll actually talk about Semiramis for a full episode because this is a legendary queen and the Romans and the Greeks got their Mesopotamian history all messed up. But there is an historical person that could be the sort of basis of the legend of Semiramis. She's in the legend, she's a super powerful queen that rules the entire world.
Wow.
We'll talk about her a lot in around 811 BC.
Maybe that's where I heard her before.
You probably did. So you are 1-0 this time.
Yes.
So let's give you the second girl from ancient history.
Let's do it.
It's Saditu.
Saditu. That's a unusually short name.
Saditu.
Is that one word or two?
One word. Saditu.
Saditu.
This might be the hardest round so far, actually, because there are no god names in this name.
Yeah, I was about to say, like...
There are no hints.
Saditu. Gosh, I am drawing a complete blank.
You have to take a wild guess.
Wild guess. Saditu. Well, I guess I can't dally any longer. I am going to go with Assyrian again.
You are correct. Yes. It's the daughter of Sennacherib.
Okay.
I haven't really gotten my research that far yet, but I think she does some very clever things on the behalf of her father. So we'll talk about her later.
All right.
Okay, now you only have to get one more right out of these
three goodness.
Remaining girls.
33% chance, folks.
Yeah, the first one is Libali Sarat. That's two words.
Libali Sarat?
Yeah, you could say that people who think they know history, they only know history if they know about Libali Sarat.
Really?
No.
Oh, it's like, that's the craziest thing I've heard you say so far.
Libali Sarat.
The Sarat.
Queen.
Queen Libali Sarat. Wow. I don't know. It's the Sarat part that sounds familiar. But why does Sarat sound familiar to me?
It shouldn't.
Okay. I'm going to say The Bali Sarat is Babylonian.
No.
Oh,
also Assyrian.
Also Assyrian. Triple Assyrian you hit me with.
Queen of Ashurbanipal.
Okay.
One of the two kings who might be greater than Ashurnasipal II, but we'll talk about him in about 50 episodes or so. So that's later. Okay, the fourth queen. Also a queen.
Also a queen. Okay.
Two words. Elat Gula.
Elat Gula?
Yes. Assyrian or Babylon?
Elat Gula. Two words.
Ever. You should play this game with your friends.
Yes, this is...
This is a killer at parties. All the girls will be impressed.
Yes. Yes, it will definitely kill parties. So feel free to use this.
So, Elat Gula, Assyrian or Babylonian? You have to get it right, Brandon. Feel the pressure.
Babylonian.
Yes!
Oh, look at that!
You have won this round, though, Assyrian.
Oh, my goodness. Look at me, folks.
Yes, the bonus round, the fifth.
Okay.
Queen.
Fifth one.
Actually, Sadita wasn't a queen, but...
Okay.
Belat Sunat.
Belat Sunat?
Yeah. I'm not making these names up.
I think you are. Belat Sunat.
Yes.
Huh. That's a weird name.
Yeah, that's the trick with this contest is, of course, that all the names are Mesopotamian, so the Assyrians have about the same names for everything.
Okay.
Assyrian or Babylonian? There's nothing on the line here. You can just answer.
I'm going to say Babylonian.
You're correct.
Oh,
four, one.
Yes.
Well done, sir.
Dominated the round. Total. All right.
Let's bore the listeners further.
Okay, yes. All right, you don't have to listen to me fumble around in my brain for random bits of info that I have accumulated. So, four. The fan of history, I am Brennan.
And Dom.
And thank you for listening.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just $1 an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.